Hello and welcome to Ultimate Voices Europe, the UF's new diversity podcast, where we highlight backgrounds and perspectives that don't always get the spotlight. My name is Dunsi, my pronouns are they, them, and I'm currently in Vienna.
Hello, my name is Annika, my pronouns are she, her, and I'm in Zurich. And Dunsi and I are both members of the EUF Diversity, Equity and Inclusion Committee. And in that role, we're hosting this podcast. We cover different topics related to diversity, such as gender, queerness, ethnicity, age, and more.
And our guest today is a good friend of mine, my former roomie, mostly known from her time with Ruth. Hello, Isa Monka.
Yeah, hi, thank you. Thank you so much for letting me on this podcast. As you said, my name is Isa Monka. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm currently based in Amsterdam, although in not that many hours, I will be in Portimão in Portugal for the Beach World.
Are you going to play or are you going to walk?
My intention was set on playing, but I've been struggling with a back injury for a while now. Actually, last Saturday was the first time that I could play Ultimate in half a year, which was a super cool experience again. But also, even though it went well the days after, I noticed fully going into this tournament, playing as like a first experience again, is just not that realistic. So I'll be there. I'll try to play a bit, but I won't see myself as like an actual competing player on the team. I will have to see a bit.
Okay, well, that's exciting. So you're back on the Frisbee turf, or this time, I guess,
the beach.
Yes. What are you most excited about playing again?
Honestly, having been out for so long and being able to play again next Saturday, it was just the general feeling of being on the field, running around. I haven't played sports in that way in such a long time. So I would say that's definitely just what I'm looking forward to right now, being on the field.
Very understandable. Isa, for those who don't know you so well, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your who you are as an Ultimate player or as a person in the Ultimate community, and what your journey has been so far to get where you are now.
All right. I started playing probably around 13, started over in Amsterdam, where I joined the first couple of national youth teams that we had in the Netherlands. From there, at one point, Gert was preparing for the World Club Championships in Cincinnati, and I decided to join. So
in 2018? Sorry, her interrupt.
Oh, no, not 2018. The one after. So 4 years ago.
2022.
Yes. So I joined that preparation, which was 2 years. And after that, I decided to take a little competitive break. I had a lot of stuff that was going on, and that is sort of where I am now. Although for next year, leading up to Worlds, I have decided to join that championship again. So I am making good progression with my back, and I hope to be able to play that tournament now.
Very nice. That's going to be exciting. Isa, I think you're a player that's pretty open about a condition that you have. You've talked to me on the field once when we played a tournament together, I think Jakob as well. You have the condition that like 1 in 10 people at least who menstruate have, endometriosis. Would you mind letting our listeners know what that is exactly?
Yes. So endometriosis, it's a condition that really affects when you have your period, and it makes it really painful. And it can have different causes, but usually, mainly, it's the case that you have some uterus cells that don't only grow within your uterus, but also outside of it. But there are also some other parts of it that could affect it. The cause is that you get really intense pain during your period, before your period, or even after your period. And I went to specialists twice to get this diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something that you really have to, it really affects you and you have to plan for it. And I really have to change stuff in my schedule around to make this work. So that's, I think, in short, what it is.
So of course, having your period affects people who have to play or who play ultimate or do any sport in that sense. And then with endometriosis, that is even a bigger factor. So how has that influenced your journey as an ultimate player?
It has definitely been difficult. I have played tournaments where it's a week before my period, it has been hard to participate. It usually flares up more when I play. So if I play a long or intense point, it gets really worse. I do feel like I know that it will go down again. But it has made participating sometimes really hard. And actually, right now, joining or playing my first tournament again with a competitive mindset, I actually decided this month to do go on the pill again. So I've been taking that for the past 3 weeks, which I haven't done in, I think, since I was 20. I tried a lot of different birth controls that were all, like, I'm really hesitant to take it because they're all, like, I feel really, really awful taking them. But that has been, for now, one of the only strategies which I'm like, if I need to compete, I'll try it again. But I'm definitely not a fan. It will affect me a lot mentally. I get really, it makes me really aggressive and angry, which I really don't like. So that is something that has come up again these past weeks. But if anyone has some good tips on how to navigate with this, do let me know, because I am looking for other strategies as well.
Yeah. I think it's mad how, like, I guess half of our population like does everyday life and then also like sports like this with like their periods with like varying degrees of pain and other symptoms. And then also a lot of people take the pill, which makes people different, or many people kind of like are affected by the hormones. And I think it's so crazy that like we're only starting to like talk about things like that in recent years. I know that like the first like public like sports figure that talked about her period was a tennis player. I've forgotten her name. I think she was English, but I'm not sure. But she was the first player to ever mention that in an interview, and it was in 2015. Like, ever mention her period. And she didn't even say my period. She was like, oh yeah, you know, it just wasn't my day. I was really tired. I've like had some like effects because, you know, like a lot of women are like a certain time in the month. Like she like really like tiptoed around the subject, but she at least kind of mentioned it. And it went through the media like crazy that she even like mentioned it a little bit. So I think it's really important that we talk about it and like, yeah, talk about.
Yeah, I think so too. Actually, also recently, a Dutch ice skater was really vocal about it. She also said, I'm hurting so much. It's my periods right now. That also was a media item still, which in some ways nice to give the attention, but also in some ways crazy that it's so little talked about, which was, I think, really nice and really good of her also. Like, she's an Olympic skater.
Yeah.
To bring that up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is, it's coming up a little bit. Like, the Lionesses, the, like, English football team, they also changed their shorts from white to blue, right? Because, like, their players were speaking up about, like being scared about leaking and, like, people seeing it. But, like, even that, like, that... we have to think about these things and that they had to fight to like get to this point. There's so many little issues, like, yeah, little issues, big issues, like, yeah, like the color of your shorts, like pain, like, I don't know, there's like people are starting, I know that the Swiss national team also football, but there's most research about it, I guess, like trains based on their menstrual cycle, which is also really interesting. And there's just so little,
super interesting,
studies about it and everything, also about endometriosis. I think the average person needs to see like 7 doctors to get a diagnosis, because it's just less focus about it. Yeah.
And then what's also crazy to me is that once you get diagnosed, the solution, the answer is just birth control. There's no other, or at least what there hasn't been anything else that was said to me except take birth control. And that was such an awful thing for me to hear, because I really hate taking it. And I feel so, I feel so different when I do take it in such a bad way. And I remember feeling so invalidated both times that I got it diagnosed, because the first time I was young, I was, I think I was 20 or something, maybe even younger. Mm-hmm. And when she told me this, I really remembered the effects that it had on me. So I actually started to cry when she said, you should just take birth control. And then she told me I should go see a psychologist. That was the issue. So that was already so traumatizing. And then the second time I got it diagnosed, the woman actually also said, you need to start birth control because it can affect your ability to have children later on in life, especially the longer you wait. Which I replied, like, I don't just want to start it right now because it makes me at this moment feel really bad. But then she sort of tried pushing me, and it really struck me, because why are we talking about my non-existent child at the moment instead of me, the person that is experiencing so much pain right here, right now, which is really crazy to me. They were also both female doctors, so it's not even an issue about not only an issue about gender, but that was really crazy experience for me, how little resources or access there are except for just take the pill.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I think also that they like, I don't know, because you're a woman, you're going to want a kid. So like, that's the focus right now. So you should control so that you can have the kid that you must have as a woman. I don't know, it kind of sounds like that, obviously. Maybe.
Yeah, it definitely came across that way.
Yeah, but that's mad. And like that, like that's still the focus, and that there's also just not as many studies, right? So like the only thing you can do is like take birth control. And I think, sorry, I'm coming up with all of these not so fun facts, but another fact is I think that one of the first studies ever done on endometriosis was by like Italian scientists, and they studied the attractiveness of women who have endometriosis versus the attractiveness of women who don't have endometriosis.
Oh, wow.
That's where the research went to.
That's crazy.
It's just crazy.
Yeah. I've also seen one about how endometriosis affects male partners as a research, which is also, again, why is that the focus?
Yeah, I mean, I think that really sums up one major aspect of the problem, right? And I mean, I think it doesn't just apply to endometriosis, but just generally that our research and also medical science, of course, is just super male-centered. And so a lot of the conditions that affect women are just, like if they're researched, there is still research from a male perspective, and probably they're just not going to be researched at all, or much less or much later. And so like maybe, you know, there would be something like a super clear measure that people could take against endometriosis so they could perform their sport, do their job, live their life, but we don't know about it because it hasn't been researched enough. So I feel like that's one part, right? And then also this not being taken seriously, it's just, how are you gonna get treatment even if it would exist, because you need to go to 7 doctors, or people tell you to go to a psychologist. So just like there's so many hurdles to overcome to even get there, and then you don't even get a solution.
Mm-hmm.
It seems
really
disencouraging.
I think it's really mad, which like goes all further than just endometriosis, like you said, Jakob, kind of like a lot of conditions that women have, and a lot of the science is only like based on like male like testing and stuff. But like because endometriosis is so unresearched and stuff, I think it's also still a lot of people don't really know about it. Has that also been an experience for you when you do share about your condition, Isa?
I think definitely in the beginning. Right now, I do feel like it's more known. Sometimes I will still get the question because I am very open about it also with in my work life, sports life. But overall, I'd say there is more awareness of it.
Mm-hmm. And how do people react, especially in the sports environment in Ultimate? Is there, I don't know, some things that have helped you with teammates or coaches, or maybe made it worse?
I think in general, there's a lot of understanding. Last Saturday, we had our last beach training and someone said, oh, I will have my period after beach. I'm sorry, I'm going to be so cranky that week before. And then we had a whole conversation with the whole table about how we feel. And again, I was thinking by myself, it's so insane how we all experience something that is so involved in our lives that you just have to deal with. There has been a lot of understanding from teammates, I'd say, and also from coaches, but I don't know. It's not necessarily a way to help out in a sense. I also wouldn't necessarily know what it would look like, but
mm-hmm. has there been a different experience, because this is a full it's a women's team, right? So I would guess a lot of the people went straight on this team. Have you ever realized a difference when you've been playing with men on the team as well?
I wouldn't say there has been an issue with it on that topic. Plenty on others. I don't think necessarily.
Do you talk as openly about it?
I think I do. I also think what helps is a lot of the male players also that I play with have been in long relationships with women. So I do feel like there was a general understanding, which made it pretty nice.
But maybe to add to that, Isa, I do, because a general understanding, I also had that notion, I think, and maybe also just to compare here, because so I joined Hood, right, at the, a bit after you for the World Cycle, and there for me actually that was the first time that it was as openly addressed as you did it, also in a team context. And I think there was a general awareness, and there was a general awareness on the mixed teams I've played previously for sure, but still there's a difference of is there awareness or it's sort of respected, right? You're not being forced to not talk about it, or if there's a space made to talk about it. So having a conversation about how we all feel in our period, I've never, not me personally, but I've never been in a team where this conversation happens openly in front of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've never played on a women's team, right? And so I play mostly in mixed teams, and I also coach mixed teams, right? And I'm this is something, and it's a bit also difficult as a sort of male red leader of a team, because you also don't want to push people to talk about something if they're not comfortable about it, but you do want to create a space. And it's in mixed gender teams, that is a challenge for sure. And it would be super nice and important for all menstruating people on the team to talk about that openly if they want to.
Yeah, for sure. I think we are going in a good direction, generally. I think also on Zurich Mix, we didn't really have open discussions or as open chats about it as we would with just a women's team. But I also think maybe that is due to people not wanting to share as much when they're around male matching players. But I remember after we played one tournament where we didn't perform as well as we wanted to, someone randomly sent a poll into the group chat, who was on their period that weekend. Because we noticed everyone except for two of our FMPs and obviously our MMPs were on their period that weekend. And we were oh, yes. And that was in our mixed team group chat. And that was, I think that was really nice because it was just like a silly joke, but it does still talk about a topic that is very under-talked. That's not a word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure.
It's quite funny.
Yeah.
All that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Isa, so we talked about, right, like that it's important to address this openly and like to decide that. But also, I feel like you can't expect any single person to do that like for themselves. But you are one of the people that like chooses to talk about this openly, which, for example, in my case was super valuable because it was one of the first experiences that I like was able to learn from someone so openly. So I'm just curious, like, have you always been this open about your condition?
I think in general, I do try to be open about these topics also because they affect me quite a lot. And usually when stuff affects me quite a lot, I'm actually quite expressive about it, also to my friends. But there definitely has been a change in what I felt comfortable with. And sometimes I am still uncomfortable about some parts of it and about what I share, because it can feel really... Sometimes it makes me feel... Yeah, I don't know what's the right word for it, but I have been in so much pain that I am like on the verge of passing out. And then I usually what I like is to be in the shower. And then what I do is I switch from super hot to super cold, from super hot to super cold, just to stay awake, so to say. And it has had more effects, which I... like sometimes felt ashamed about, and then going to the doctors and telling them like, hey, I have been in such a state that, well, this and this and this, I feel this and this and this has been difficult. And I don't always share those parts, even though I do think they are important. But in that sense, it has been a little bit of a journey. I think what happens when I play and I have it is that I can be really in pain, and then I am on the sidelines going into like a little ball because it hurts so much. And in that sense, people see it, and then it's also easier to talk about. But the stuff that people don't see is still a little bit more difficult to talk about. So I think the way that I played sports and it was, people saw what an effect it had, made it easier to talk about. Because it's also different for people that have it. Like for me, it grows, or like it gets worse when I play. For some people, it might not. And that made it maybe easier for me. But I definitely say there has been a journey there. But overall, I think the positive response that I have gotten has made it easier to keep being vocal about it, which is super nice.
Mm-hmm. That's nice to hear. Yeah. I also thought about like what you just said, right? This kind of, at some point, something becomes so visible that I guess you can't hide it, and then it becomes a topic. And that, of course, also makes it easier to address it, I guess, but also it kind of forces you to address it, right? Because people walk up to you and are like, hey, what's wrong? And I think that kind of applies to a lot of like stigmatized issues, I would say. So I'm also thinking of like, I don't know, any forms of violence or like discrimination in sports or and like the wider world of like, something becomes easier to talk about when something bad happens, or like you can see like somebody suffering and then we talk about it. And that's on one hand good if like we learn something from, I don't know, mishaps that happen or like like cases, but then also there's always people suffering from it, and like in your case that suffering maybe couldn't be taken away, but like it would be nice to have an environment where that wouldn't be the necessary like trigger to allow you to talk about it. But I think that's just how it goes sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure. Do you think there's anything, you already said there's like not much people can do, like about specifically now endometriosis, and like there's not much people can do to like help, or like except maybe make a space to talk about it if you want to. Do you think there's anything that like regarding the topic of periods in general, like can be improved within teams and tournaments, like tournament organizers, even like because we are on the committee of like diversity, equity, inclusion committee of the EUF, that like the EUF could consider for tournaments and other things?
Well, it's funny what you mentioned about the white shorts. It is something that also this past finals, it got a lot, because the finals was like a release of white pants. And I think I heard a lot of people say, oof. And it was also, I think one of our teammates actually bled through it in the first 2 hours or something. Mm. So that is, I guess, something that can happen.
Yeah.
Overall, I'm trying to think a bit about it, about the accessibility within toilets, that sort of stuff. And of course, we usually have Dixie, so then you don't need a, what's it called, a prullenbak?
Trash can.
Trash can, I guess. which is sometimes an overlooked thing, that organizations don't have a trash can.
Yeah.
But I'd say those Dixies then work out. Always have toilet paper.
Yeah, I think that's
available.
One
that's just that's just something that is just something that's really nice.
Having the toilets is important, but also having them kind of accessible, like you said, or enough. I think sometimes at tournament there's a real way that you have to walk to a toilet, which like is fine. But I think it helps people who menstruate to like maybe just have to change a tampon real quick before a game, or you don't really want to like run all the way, or like, I don't know. And also we have a uterus, so we have a smaller place for our bladder, so we have to pee more. So like things like that are definitely good things to consider. Yeah.
Maybe to add to that, I think because there's more sides to that as well, right? I think so, having enough toilets, having like toilet paper, also having enough toilets for like female people only, I think is a big thing, because especially like again at UCF it was like the case, right? We had a couple of, like on the far fields we had a couple of I think like 4 Dixies there, and then you usually had to wait a couple of minutes to use those, just because there's people from like 10 fields trying to quickly pee before the game. And then like if you have people of all genders queuing up for that, but then there's people on their period that maybe like need to switch their tampon or something super quickly. I think that's something that's also sometimes not thought about enough, of like prioritization sort of needs.
I think like other things to do would be kind of hard to implement. I think one thing that could be nice would be period products. We could think about that, because like we talk about accessibility. I think it comes back to accessibility in almost every podcast. And like period poverty is a real thing, right? There's extra tax on in a lot of countries on like women's product, anything that's pink, a razor that's pink, whatever, but also period products. So like period poverty is a real thing. And I think if we can like just make a little bit of a change by adding like free period products, that could be cool. Also like tampons and tabs. Is it called?
Yeah, definitely. Pads.
Pads, lol. Also tampons and pads, because like not everyone is comfortable using a tampon as well. And I think that's also an important thing.
Yeah. Maybe, sorry, Isa, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it would be a nice thing to just either have it in the toilets or over at a like information tent where you could grab some.
For sure.
Just the point that I made, it's a bit of a tangent, but I think what relates to that as well, at least in my mind, is the no public peeing policy that is being enforced more frequently now. Like there was this issue at the Under 24 Worlds, right, where a French player like peed somewhere next to a field, and then he got suspended for the semifinal. Like a huge it was made a huge issue, and even though it's been like a policy for years and like Now it was just the first time, or one of the first times that it was enforced, actually. But I do think that's also a question of solidarity, of like, yes, just because like you can just pee anywhere and it's like not an issue for you. It's not something you're supposed to do. And like, I don't know. I think that it's kind of related to me as well, of like just thinking about everyone and everyone's like situation. No, that's a weird word. Just thinking about everyone and like just having toilets for everyone, and then everybody should use those instead of like men peeing in random places. I think, yeah, it doesn't help people on their period, women on their period, but I think it's part of a bigger thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I also like, I think like we invited you here to talk about periods, to talk about endometriosis that maybe a lot of people don't think about, talk about or like know about. And I think, I don't know why this like comes to me now, but I think it's just really important to keep talking about it. And also like, especially like on an open team where like maybe no one has their periods, or like it's less of an issue when you like kind of like go pee anywhere, or like, I guess it's also doesn't affect you as much as a team. But I think as this affects people in your life, even if it's not on the ultimate community, it's still cool that we talk about it here. And like, I actually think I learned a lot from you now, Isa, even though like I knew a lot about it already. Like,
that's great.
I think it's really important, because I haven't had like a talk about periods and about accessibility for people who menstruate in an ultimate context ever, really. So I'm really glad we're doing this, and I think it's also cool, and it kind of aligns with like what the EUF is planning for the next few years, of like kind of focusing on women's ultimate. Yeah. And this is why we also kind of wanted to invite you here. We're going to have maybe guests who like talk about being mothers and playing and like things like that, which I think shouldn't take away at all from like the rest, like all of the other issues that we've talked about before. But like kind of with a shift of the EUF's focus on women's ultimate, I think it's cool to kind of like bring up these issues, because that's actually something that maybe we can take on and like bring to the EUF and chat about.
Yeah, beautiful. And I also think in the bigger picture, great to talk about, to really see if we can get that research going in a way that the only solution being brought forward won't be the birth control or the pill, which just can be so impactful, definitely for young females. So
for sure. Yeah.
Thank you for bringing me over and starting the conversation.
Thank you. just maybe one final thought that I had also is that, because we talked about the accessibility part, right? The EUF is also, or one of the aims for like the coming years, hopefully next year, is to like have a safeguarding policy. And like have those apply to all EUF sanctioned events, and then furthermore maybe help facilitate this kind of the knowledge, I guess, and the structure to national federations and teams, etc., to generally create like safer and more accessible environments, but then also specifically for women. I think so, having like guidelines, for example, for tournaments on the toilet situation is something that we should implement in the future, and where we can take away learnings from personal accounts like yours, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Sounds really great. Yeah.
So usually we have one of our or our guests bring a question. We ask you really spontaneously. So have you thought of a question in the meantime for us?
Well, what I was wondering, I don't even know necessarily if it's within your task field, but you are involved with diversity within the ultimate community. And I was wondering if there is one federation or country where you have seen some really nice examples, or something what you would say is something that is nice to bring forward to also other countries or federations.
I think we're not as much in contact with a lot of federations. I think the contact we do have is oftentimes when something maybe doesn't go well. And they have questions about something like often safeguarding issues, for example. So I think that's something that we are thinking of, like Jakob said, have a little bit more of a policy and maybe like at some point its own place, like its own committee or something. I'm happy to answer questions from federations for now, but I also like work with people that have been sexually harassed in like my line of work, so sometimes it's a bit much. But like that's definitely a thing that comes up. It's more what doesn't go well, which is a shit answer from my side to the question. But I can also shout out some federations that, for example, have had a trans policy by themselves for a long time that is very inclusive. And there's different ways to go about it. I know that, like, obviously I'm Swiss, so I know that the Swiss Federation like just has a policy that like the women's division is open for anyone who is not a cis man. Like that's the policy, which is also, I think, like a good way to look about on it. It's different from the EUF's one, but that's one shout out I can make.
So it's like a Flinta division, basically.
Sorry? Like a Flinta division. Yeah, exactly.
But it's called the women's division, or?
Sorry?
Is it called the women's division?
It's still called the women's division, yes. But like for maybe for context for our listener, Flinta, I think we explained it once in the first episode, yeah. Stands for like female, lesbian, inter, non-binary, trans, agender. So like that would kind of be the division. But yeah, I was going to say now I'm rambling. So maybe Jakob, you have.
Yes, I can pick up there. I do. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of what you said holds true. Like usually we hear about the negative things. I think also, again, that's something to take away for the future. And it's also part of like the bigger project idea of like encouraging women's ultimate is to be more in touch with the national federations on like what they're doing, what the situation is, maybe what their needs are as well. So probably there's a couple of federations that would deserve a shout out now, or we actually don't even know
for sure
what they're doing or like what issues they're working on right now. I do also want to mention UK Ultimate. I think UK Ultimate has been a leading governing body in Ultimate in Europe generally in terms of like professionalization and a lot of policies. I do know like with their transgender policy, they've been one of the first like federations to publicly enforce it. And also think about like safeguarding. They actually have a safeguarding policy that's like sort of been applied. So shout out to UK Ultimate. And I think a lot of other federations can follow up on that. I'm personally currently working on the safeguarding policy for the Austrian Federation. But yeah, there's of course lots still to do.
Yeah, I think the UKU even deserves a third shout out also for like workshops or like camps they do for like women matching players, which is also really cool. And I know that like a lot of other federations have done projects that like have already finished or like started on like organizing camps and things like that. Yeah, but I think the most work we do or like how we work is like EUF based and like less in contact with the federations, which I think, yeah, we are planning to change a bit to actually know what's happening from our committee. I'm not saying that the EUF in general is not in contact. I think just like our committee.
Yeah. I think that provides a nice segue into another question, Isa, I've been wanting to ask you because we've been talking about national federations now. And I know that you also have been an active part of the Dutch Federation. And maybe to give a bit more context why maybe that is interesting or relevant, like governing bodies are like one of the major sort of points where you can work on, right, to improve like gender equity and diversity in sports and still in most sports and also in ultimate, like the majority of governing bodies are completely male dominated. So like the presidents are male, the general secretaries, whatever, mostly. And so that means decisions about all people are mostly being made by men, right? So it's like one of the biggest or most important steps to change that is to like manage to get women into leading positions and decision-making positions. And that has been a challenge, I think, for many like federations, even if they want to. So it's super cool to see a woman like you in working in the federation and bring in your perspective and everything. So yeah, Isa, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your work with the federation, what your role is, how you came into that, and maybe what that means for you.
Thank you. I actually didn't know that about federations, that they are usually male-dominated. But it is interesting that you say that, because actually from a certain perspective is, or this perspective is also a little bit why I wanted to join. Because in my experience, I realized like there isn't for women in the Netherlands right now that many different options to play. Of course, you have GRUT, which is a super high level team, competitive, which is something that's really nice that we have. But if you then look at, tiers below, there's actually not that much options. And there, I think you can say that GRUT right now is the only club which will have at practice enough women to play 7 against 7. So for me, that was a big reason to go and join the federation, because for me, in a larger goal would be to have this opportunity for women, because this is also what makes it right now that it's so hard for women to grow in the sport and to be taken seriously as players, which is something that you really see in a lot of clubs. And next to that, also, I want young girls to have opportunities that do want to play at the highest level, especially when I see, like for my girlfriend, Floor Keulert, one of the reasons for me also to join the federation is because I want young Floor Keulerts, like little children that are women and want to compete and want to grow and want to have sports be their main source of, you know, what they do, to have that opportunity. So it's really interesting that you say it, because that I do think is a large part of my motivation on why I joined the federation.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined last year, and I must say it has been very fun. We have a nice board going at the moment. And these are topics that get discussed. So yeah, it's nice to have multiple different genders, different people in a board, I would say.
That's such a good answer. We could have, like, almost like we planned this, but we actually didn't. No, thank you for that answer. And I think, yeah, it's really nice that you're kind of like also looking at like levels that aren't on the elite level, which I think we focus on a lot and which is important, but you also need like to grow the sport from grassroots to kind of like get players that then can become elite. And if you only have like opportunities for elite players, that can also kind of hinder the growth of your sport. So I really applaud your initiative. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think, again, that also fits very well into like a wider trend that we're seeing is that the number, like generally, I think as our sport like moves towards professionalization, you have people move like from smaller teams towards top teams, right? And that's a trend in all divisions, I think, but especially in the women's division, we've seen, and that's also like very nicely trackable with like how many teams are participating in EUCS and EUCF and
UC as well, like UC, yes. Big tournaments.
Yeah, like how many women's teams are participating. And while probably the overall level in Europeans women's ultimate is increasing drastically, like we see, right? We've seen Schalt, for example, really compete with like top US teams at US Open this summer, whereas 4 years ago at WUK, the European women's teams were quite far away from the top American teams. So like the level is increasing a lot, but really like at the top and at the cost of like the grassroots level, because you also have a lot of like really good players move away from their home teams to be able to play at the level that is appropriate for them, which really like all the power to them. I'm not here to tell anyone what to do. And it's like, I think everybody should deserve to play on the level that they are at. I think it's a super important experience, but I think from a like federation standpoint or like from a wider standpoint, that is a bit of a troubling development, because that means smaller teams sometimes die. And so something also, again, what Annika already mentioned with like a focus on women's ultimate from the UF side for the future is like trying to stop that trend, and not as in stop like good players to go to good teams, but more like how can we allow that and still have the smaller or more local teams like be able to grow, be able to go to tournaments, have chances to like practice 7-on-7, maybe have people take their expertise back to their home teams again that they learned from somewhere else. So yeah, like sort of not forgetting about the grassroots level, because that is the one that provides the basis for everything else. It's just super important.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree with your vision there as well. And for me, I am a big believer of that these two indeed can also be synced and help each other. But right now, there's just usually such a big divide between them where they also don't ever see each other play. Yeah. And for me, from my own personal experience, the reason that I continued playing is because I came to this practice and there were Ben Oort and there were Floor Keulerts, and I could see them and I could learn from them and I could think what, you know, what the next step could be. So for me, my vision in that is also really to enhance it by getting these two groups together. So in our federation, what we're trying to do is there's like a plan being made for this highest level, this elite level. But for me, or like for our federation to really want to move forward with the plan, we think it's important that when you have these practices, the youth national teams just need to be there at the same field as well. They just need to be able to see what level you can get to. Because right now, a lot of players that just play in the Netherlands don't know Gert, don't know these people. So I do think that's a first step, or that's my vision in it. But what you're saying, I think, is true. There is now such a big gap, which isn't contributing in a nice way to just overall ultimate.
Yeah, I think it's like what the goal is to like grow the grassroots and then like create a pipeline, kind of like, yeah, bring the teams closer by like having a pipeline of having like practice players. I know that like Ruud does that too, but like to kind of like, make people see where they can get to and make them get motivated, have idols, like you said, like people to look up to. And I think that really helps in the sport. So it's also like we often have discussions about like, should we have a first team and a second team, or like how do we divide it when we have too many FMPs for like a tournament? And I think there's like pros and cons for everything, but I think it's also nice to actually have a competitive team and a team that can grow players and then like have the aspiration to kind of like make that first team and like create a pipeline like that. But then, yeah, that again needs a big base of FMPs or like, I guess, any kind of player. When you look at the big picture, it's just from the numbers that we see more of an issue for women's ultimate.
True. Yeah. For sure. And like the pipeline, again, it needs to go both ways, right? So you have people like growing up in the sport, becoming elite athletes at some point, and you also need people with from the top level to like give something back. And again, like we don't earn anything in the sport. Like people do it for fun. I think everyone already puts in enough time into the sport. So like you can't expect or force anyone to like, oh, you also need to give youth practices. You also need to be part of your board in your club or your federation. But everybody who does is like a huge boon. And then we need to just create structures where that is something encouraging and fun. And like people like you, Issa, can be like, oh, actually, this is like fun work. Like I enjoy this and I have a vision here. I think that's some like a picture we need to paint for people. So that happens by itself.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm going to, looking at the time, going to like take a close here. I think it's really interesting how we've had like kind of like two discussions that are both so revolved around FMPs and the women's division a lot, period chats and the federation and like grassroots level talks. And I think both are really important, and it's important to just talk openly about all these issues. Issa, we have like one last question for you or task. Would you like to give a shout out to like an initiative, a person, whatever you like?
For me, it has to be Erik van der Spek. He is the president right now at my federation, so I'm on the board with him. He is one of the main reasons I joined the federation, And I think also one of the reasons I like it so much because of his true heart for the sport, how much he enjoys it, how much, because in the federation, where you're not only representing ultimate, you're also representing disc golf. And he also has such a heart for disc golf, even though that's not the sport that he plays. But he really has a way of inspiring people. He has a way of making people feel seen and heard. And I feel like I like learn a lot from him, just also from being on the federation. So it will definitely have to be him. Thank you, Erik.
Lovely shout out.
Yes. Cool. Well, yeah, on that note, I think thank you so much, Issa, for coming here, for talking both about your like personal experiences and also your vision. I think it was super inspiring to hear you speak and share some thoughts with you. And good luck next week. I hope you get to play. I hope your back is fine. And
thank you.
I'm going to see you afterwards. But everyone else, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Thank you, Issa. Goodbye and good luck.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Goodbye.